Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I take what you pay, but I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I take what you pay, but I got to put you down.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of Knuckles and Gloves, Bite City, the Oregonian, blah, blah, blah. With me, I got Bryn Jonathan Butler, author, filmmaker, troublemaker. Good dude, though. What's up, man?
We're gonna take listeners on an ambient walk from, let's see, Washington Heights to Sugar Hill to Hamilton Heights to Harlem. To the Upper West Side, to Midtown on this podcast.
Perfect. That's the only
so
way to do it.
Just listen for it. Listen for it. You'll be able to distinguish and delineate the wonderful town. Now, I've been made fun of a few times on social media for the like, on the walking nature of our talk. So I thought I would prime you with some orientation.
I think it first started out, or maybe on your second show, that was the show where you were huddled in Roy Jones' rooster cage.
That's right. You're quite right.
So it all started there. But man, we got a shitload of boxing this weekend. And I mean, not all of it's great, but there are at least some names going on. And it's kind of, to me, like one of those weekends where they're just like killing it with like the amount of boxing going on. You know what I mean?
Oh, I mean, I was going through a list of upcoming fights to talk about. I mean, GGG announcing his fight against Mark Tarosian. How do you say it? How do you say his name? I struggle with these Armenian names.
Vanis Martirosian.
Martirosian. Thank you. The PAC press conference was pretty hilarious against Matisse and dumping Freddie Roach, it looks like. Amir Khan fighting a Canadian, the son of a bitch, and then Frampton and Donaire. Good stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in boxing right now, which is good. You know, the wheels of boxing media have been turning daily, so that's nice. But I mean, I'd have to say, I think the biggest, perhaps the most infamous, but the biggest thing going on this weekend is Adrian Broner's fighting Jesse Vargas on Showtime. But, you know, with Adrian Broner, there's always some extracurricular kind of, you know, bullshit attached to whatever it is he's doing. And this is no exception against Jesse Vargas, who is a very good fighter. But Jesse Vargas has gotten like almost zero attention going into this weekend because it's Adrian Broner and there's always something going on. So Adrian Broner has apparently picked up some errant beef with some rapper who's got absolutely ridiculously awful tattoos that look like they were drawn by a small child all over his face and shit. Some guy, it looks like 6x9. 6x9, I'm guessing, is his, it's like a series of letters that spell out fucking numbers, so I don't know what this guy is. But Adrian Broner has got a little beef with this dude, and they're talking about, you know, I've heard several comments about there's going to be a shooting at Barclays and shit and on Saturday, and I mean, you know, whatever it is, it's just, it starts becoming like not about the fight, which is unfortunate because, again, Jesse Vargas is a pretty good fighter.
Vargas is a very good fighter, and this is I think it's been make or break for Broner for a while now. It's just he sells tickets at a level which is quite surprising given, you know, he hasn't done terribly well since he's moved up in weight and faced a lot of this outside the ring drama. It just seems like at any moment we're going to get some real dire news about where he's headed outside the ring. So if he can turn it around and put on a brilliant performance, I mean, he's still able to sell tickets, move the needle, and make some money. So I hope this is an opportunity for him to sort of rehabilitate what's been seemingly going wrong for a few years now. It's astounding to me just how long he's been in the picture, and yet he's still young, but also it just seems like his career almost is about to go off a cliff at any moment.
Well, apparently, it sucks that it's like, it's almost never about the actual fight at this point, but I mean, you know, he's had serious legal trouble. The last that I heard was that about like a week or week and a half ago, something like that, that, you know, there was going to be like sexual assault charges pending against him and all sorts of shit. The dude is just, I mean, if you read this dude's Instagram account, and I think that he's deleted a bunch of stuff at this point, but the guy is, and you and I have talked about this before, like, I think he's like legitimately troubled. Like, I think that he probably has some sort of psychiatric issue that is, like, undiagnosed, and the dude obviously drinks or does some kind of shit, and that is not good for people who have head issues, and the guy is constantly in trouble, and it's unfortunate, because he's also a pretty good fighter, too. That's the grand, you know, this is just boxing, the wasted ability and wasted talent thing. That's just a broken record, but it is true in his case too. As much as I dislike the dude and kind of take pleasure in watching him get his ass kicked when he does, he's a pretty good fighter when he kind of pulls it together sometimes.
He's very talented. I mean, I think he was a total blue chip fighter early on in his career and continued to show promise and then just got derailed. And I agree with you. I think something is badly, seriously wrong, and I hope he can get some of that attention, but I mean, there's a lot of wreckage in the fast lane all over the place in this country, and Rohner does not seem to attract people that really facilitate his growth as a person or help mitigate his demons. So getting hit in the head repeatedly is not going to help anything either. So I just don't know what he's going to do after he leaves the sport. He seems, it just always seems precarious with him, no matter what direction he goes with his life the last several years. So it is sad to see. I mean, I dislike his character. I dislike the way he carries himself. But I also, like you say, it's almost like it's not that he's not responsible or accountable, but it just seems like something's wrong with him.
Something really actually might be wrong with him. And, you know, and if that is the case, then I don't necessarily want to make fun of that. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. The fight itself, though, again, not much has been talked about the fight itself. And Jesse Vargas seems to be pretty conscious of the fact that, you know, Broner's slipping. Like, he doesn't seem that focused on the fight half the time. And he's, you know, he could kind of be caught unawares, as it were, you know, and he seems like he's up for this. It's a really good opportunity. He's shown that he's a really good fighter before. I didn't really think that he showed up against Manny Pacquiao, which sucked, because I thought he was actually in a position to do much better than he did, but, you know, he rallied hard against Tim Bradley. He's shown that he's a pretty good fighter, so this is a good opportunity, and it's not the kind of fight that Adrian Broner can really just mess around in. So if he does come in motivated, though, I would like to see what happens.
I agree. No, it's exciting. I mean, Broner is hard to not pay attention to when he's fighting, and I know his antics outside the ring are getting tiresome, but he's a consistently entertaining fighter. Win or lose, there's just good theater with him and good skills. You know, like, it's, you can see the talent there. There is an A-grade talent, and he's just not able to consistently sort of deliver on a regular basis. And that itself, I don't know, just wasted potential is dramatic and sad. So there's something very compelling about him. I wish it could be more positive, though.
He just doesn't seem to be the kind of guy where, you know, the story is going to end well on pretty much any level. You know, flaunting the money and kind of, you know, spending it as the dude can't be making that much money because he can't seem to stay in the ring that consistently. So it's like, damn, it can't end well. But I am kind of eager to see what happens this Saturday because it could be a bit of a shakeup in the welterweight division if Jesse Vargas is able to handle Adrian Broner or vice versa, really, because I mean, Mikey Garcia kind of already pulled the trick, and we called that before it happened, but it starts becoming also about a conversation about, like, on what level is Broner on? Like, is he still super talented? Is he still kind of like a fight away from turning the corner? Or is he now just kind of like a name that's ready to be gobbled up by whomever? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, and I mean, even as an opponent, I think he's just not really asserted himself. Like, once he's moved up in weight, it just seems like there's damaged goods mentally, and maybe just physically, he's just not meant to be here. And yeah, on a lot of levels, this is a very bad situation that I think is going to get a whole hell of a lot worse, even if he stays on the right side of the law. I just think boxing, that pecking order is going to go after him because he's worth a lot of money for people on the way up to take him out and to do so looking good and to exploit the fact that he just doesn't have the focus to really come in any kind of disciplined manner. Or even just making weight seems to be a major challenge for him. So that's not a good look in boxing where you don't just, you know, lose on the scoreboard. You lose for the rest of your life with what you have in the ring. So I don't like to see that. Like, he's very compromised at this point.
Yeah, and it's just really difficult to know exactly where he is as a fighter, but if there's one saving grace, I guess, coming in here, is that Jesse Vargas is not a very big welterweight. You know, he's not an overly physical guy, and because Adrian Broner probably does not belong in welterweight, quite frankly. He just can't make any other weight. You know, he's had difficulty making weight all the way down to 130, couldn't make 130 anymore, went up to 135, couldn't make 130, blah, 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 and on he went. So now it seems he doesn't want to make 140 anymore. So I don't know. I'm not really entirely sure what he wants out of, you know, beyond the making money part. I'm not entirely sure what he wants out of this whole boxing thing, because I don't really see him defeating any serious welterweights.
I never think it's a good look when you're that early on in your career. You don't seem to be able to shake off the identity of sort of a hero that you have, your mentor figure, just wanting to be Mayweather and all that, which itself is just a horrifying thing as far as a proposition. But, you know, like Muhammad Ali, for example, was a complete mimic of trying to be Sugar Ray Robinson. He would dress like him. He would, you know, try to imitate him. He would stalk him. Tyson was the same way, imitating his heroes. Right. And at some point, you sort of find who you are. I have no sense that Broner has found who he is, other than not evading the law the way Mayweather has so successfully navigated, despite, you know, copious attention to beating up women.
Are you Broner, making people Broner, around you laugh?
No, I'm just walking by City College, so there's more younger people on a spring day. No, I just think it's going to be a terrible situation for him. I don't think he has the character, and I don't think he has the ability, at least manifested at this weight class. So it's going to be a sad, sad one. I mean, in a way, I get this foreboding feeling with where Pacquiao is headed. I was listening to a bit of his press conference, and I'm just feeling like, oh my God, it could be worse than what we saw with Ali and Larry Holmes, you know, like that last phase with Burbick. I hate that feeling with fighters where there's just beatings ahead.
Yeah. And I think I've mentioned this before, but Manny in particular just kind of has this vacancy about him where, like, and I don't mean like, you know, vacant, like he's like shell-shocked or something, but I mean vacant in terms of like, he doesn't really seem that enthusiastic about the fighting anymore. because even in the lead up to the Mayweather fight, I remember I was invited onto this event that Manny Pacquiao was holding. It was called like Smile Time or something like that. It was this online, you know, broadcast. And anyway, point is, I was on there for like an hour, and they were interviewing Manny Pacquiao with Russell Peters and all this type of shit. And Manny Pacquiao looked up from his phone all of like twice. Like he literally just sat there on his phone during this entire interview and looked up a couple times and was just like, yeah, mm-hmm. And that was it. And it just seems like he's not really much more than that in the context of, like, you know, press conferences and all this type of shit. He sure trains. But that kind of, like, after a while, I think that just kind of becomes part of who a fighter is. You know, like, most fighters, a lot of fighters don't like to train, but that just kind of becomes part of the job, you know, and part of what you become used to doing. Beyond the training, though, like, he just kind of doesn't seem that into it.
I think that there's a big element to Pacquiao, and it's true of Ali too. We forget it, but Ali in the second phase of his career was not excessively disciplined the way he was early on in his career. Like once fame hit, you know, he went into that first Joe Frazier fight, for example, and his wife said he didn't really train very hard. She was expecting him to lose, and I feel like there's an element with Pacquiao, and I mean this respectfully because I like Pacquiao and I think he has done a tremendous amount of good and there is a good heart, but I think that there's another side to him that's just so completely full of shit as a person and maintaining that front. You know, like he was a raging womanizer. He's drinking.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen footage. There was a documentary of him that originally was shot by Leon Gass and then some wealthy guy took it over and then, quote unquote, became like the director of it. But I saw footage that didn't make the final cut because it turned into like a PR film, basically. And he's not very nice a lot of the time, even to his inner circle or people coming to see him, even like sort of high level dignitary-ish type people. I just think it's, and I don't blame him entirely because the bubble that guy is in, being treated as this, you know, savior-like figure in his home country and what he's come from and overcome and all that. But, I mean, he's just in such a bizarre, you know, the Justin Bieber or the Michael Jackson-like bubble. Like, no healthy person should do well in that environment. Nobody should be able to cope unless they're a complete sociopath. And I don't think he is a sociopath. I just think he's a victim of the side of it we don't see because we only look at the good stuff, the riches and the agency you get with being that rich or that powerful or influential. And I mean, just I think is bored of all the other stuff. And he seems probably bored of the good stuff too. Like, I mean, it just becomes so monotonous.
I remember not long after he had defeated Marco Antonio Barrera, he was like, you know, mildly famous after that here. Obviously people knew who he was, but I remember reading on, you know, like sites like Fight News and stuff like that, there would be a handful of times news reports coming out of Manila where he was getting into bar fights. Like he was getting into bar fights, you know, drunken brawls and all sorts of shit like that. And then I also actually remember that a couple of these stories were erased. Like they were put up and then taken down. And we were like, what? Why is that? I mean, I don't know why that was. It was probably some pressure from, like, some PR people or something like that. I don't think there was, like, a conspiracy or some shit. But the point is that, yeah, I don't think that he's nearly the kind of person that people feel he probably is. But he's probably going to take a shot or two from Matisse. It just kind of depends on how shot that guy is. That's a little bit of a shit show fight, but I guess it's kind of one of those, you know, who's more shot type of fights, and sometimes those can fight. But, you know, since it is welterweight, that does kind of figure into this weekend a little bit, but another guy who's fighting on that Adrian Broner card, Ed Barclays, who's fairly troubled, Gervonta Davis, I don't know if you've followed his career very much. I mean, most of what people follow at this point is probably on social media and that kind of stuff. But another guy who's extremely talented, really fast hands, good power, moves really well, but from a relatively rough area in Baltimore, and also can't really seem to stay out of trouble. Runs his mouth quite a bit on social media and in a way that's kind of icky sometimes. So, but he's fighting this weekend, and again, much of that has become not much about the fight. He's fighting a guy named Jesus Cuellar, an Argentinian dude, who just recently lost to Abner Mattis in late 2016. So, I don't know. I think it's probably going to be an interesting card and an interesting crowd at Barclays. How about that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of symmetry between him and Broner. I see a lot of parallels to talent and that sinking feeling that this is a guy who's going to fuck it up, and a lot of why he is fucking it up probably isn't necessarily fair to just completely hold him responsible. Like, I just think there's a lot of stuff going on in the trajectory that he's on that he's struggling with. He's struggling to cope with this new identity, with some money, with some influence and some attention. But I was really impressed the times I've seen him fight live and seen him on TV. I mean, he has so many tools, and he has this, you know, immense kind of pride about the way in which he's dispatching opponents. That's really exciting. It makes every moment that he's fighting exciting, because you can feel the disdain he has for somebody being able to stand up in front of him. And that's fun. I mean, not a lot of fighters have that, and he does. But there's another side to him, like a look in his eyes and a kind of air of menace that he's sort of trying to infect anybody who's in his presence with, that you just think that's just insecurity and it's something else that I don't think he's dealing with. And I feel like he's going to try to, I don't know. You just get a sense that there's a bad person in there with his swagger, that it's pretty dark what's going on. And if he's carrying that same swagger wherever he goes, if that's not part of his intimidation routine with opponents, but that just is who he wants to be out in the world, you know, eventually, like we said with Mike Tyson, you're going to get into a knife fight where somebody doesn't bring a knife, and things are going to get really, really bad. And he looks like he's on the lookout for that person who's going to bring a gun to that knife fight. And I hate that feeling when I see it in people.
Yeah, it's there's no question. Okay, like I said earlier that, like, some of the stuff that he said on social media and whatnot is kind of icky, and that's true. I mean, I'm not going to move off of that. Like, just for instance, and I don't want to get carried away with it, and I don't want to get too deep in it, but Michelle Rosado, who a lot of people know on Twitter and on, you know, other social media, and also from around the Philly fight scene, you know, Gervonta Davis had said something along the lines to her of, you know, basically that she was a slut, tried to slut shame her on social media, and it didn't go over very well. A lot of people were just like, that obviously, that's shitty. And I'm not going to excuse that. And that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. I'll only say this. Especially since the advent of, like, Facebook and Twitter and whatnot, and fighters being on those kinds of platforms, perhaps I just didn't realize it, or maybe I just didn't see it very clearly before then, but it took a couple minutes on these platforms for me to realize that, like, the vast majority of fighters have fucking nothing intelligent to say, and many of the things that they say are just flat out stupid as shit. But then the other layer of that is that if I would have been given one of these platforms when I was 18 or 19 years old, thank goodness I was not. Thank goodness I was not. Because I look back and see it was like 5 years ago, and I'm like, wow, holy shit. Wow. So, I mean, anyway, again, not excusing it, but at the same time, also realizing that when, kind of as you said, you give people a microphone and they're not used to having a microphone, they don't really know what to do with it, shit's going to happen.
Yeah, you know, it brings up something. There's a little documentary in The Shining, which is fun, where Jack Nicholson is interviewed, and one of the first things he says back then, this is 1980, is that the average person doesn't realize that a celebrity in like a matter of months meets more people than the average person will meet in their entire lifetime, and like how to deal with that. And it is an interesting thing to consider. Like, I've talked to people sometimes and they reference who in high school 10 years later is still thinking about them, sort of tracking their progress. Where did they end up? You know, all that kind of thing. I just can't imagine being balanced in any way. I don't know if these guys are any professional athletes or celebrities. Like, it's very unreal. It's very disturbing and troubling. And now, of course, it's like the national ambition for everybody to be that way, or else you're a fucking loser. Like, there's a metric attached to your value and all that kind of thing with social media. So for somebody who comes from an environment that's, you know, extraordinarily dangerous and threatening, it just must be so hard for these guys. And I agree, like, it doesn't excuse rampant misogyny or any number of other things that just cross a line of decency or civility. But I mean, they're also trying to get attention by crossing that line, because people
right.
are interested in transgressing.
And then we're rewarding
kind of
it. And then we're rewarding
then we're
it
rewarding
like
it.
We are right now.
We, you know, Mayweather's legacy in a very big way is somebody booed throughout their career for ostensibly what they're doing to sell tickets. It didn't sell tickets, so he finds a way to do it. He couldn't find a way to do it on any positive level. You know, he could never be the proverbial baby face in wrestling, but as a heel, nobody was better. And it speaks a lot to what we don't want to see in ourselves that are attracted to it, because we wouldn't pay for it if we weren't attracted to it. Same was true of Tyson before Mayweather,
right,
which is where he got it from.
Right. And I mean, more power to him. Like, if that's going to be how it is, like, we, especially if we're supporting fighters and we're wanting fighters to get the most out of their careers with the least amount of damage, I mean, it's kind of like a do whatever it is you got to do situation. But, you know, that's not always the case. And they're obviously hashtag levels here. But anyway, also on that card, I don't know that I would call it necessarily a quote unquote stacked card, but I mean, it's a very solid card, and I would say that it's a card that's pretty well matched. Jesus Cuellar, for instance, is a pretty heavy hitting guy who's gone through a number of somewhat smaller guys, leading up to Durante Davis, but he at least has some semblance of a chance against him, and it's, you know, well matched. And in the other fight on that card is Jermall Charlo versus Hugo Centeno Jr. That's
good
another
fight
that is, it's very, very interesting, I think. I know a lot of people are probably counting out Centeno, but he's a guy who's, I think, just because of his dimensions, really difficult to deal with. Not an easy guy to... not an easy guy to deal with, because he's very rangy, has a peculiar style, hits harder than you think. One of those guys that, like, you know, will kind of sleepwalk through some of those rounds and all of a sudden, like, whack you with a fucking axe, and it's like, holy shit, where did that come from?
Yep.
And so, you know, I think that he's kind of a bit of a dark horse in this fight, and this could be fairly interesting.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I think it's a good card. It's not a great card, but it's a very strong B-level card up and down in terms of what's being put on TV. So, yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Are you going to be heading out for it?
I'm not. I'm stuck trying to finish editing the rest of this chess book, so I'm going to work on that. But I'm going to watch it on TV. I've got a friend of mine who's got a huge boxing archive, who's taping it for me. So I'm going to check it out that way.
Nice. Is that friend Thomas Hauser?
No, her name is Elizabeth Szilagyi, and her husband and her have run a boxing archive since I was born in 1979, and it now consists of 14,000 fights, I believe. No, sorry, 14,000 DVDs and tapes of fights. It's the biggest collection in the world, taped off of television, all manually edited to avoid commercials. It's just jaw-dropping, and it's all housed in her apartment.
I hope it's insured. Jesus.
It's quite something. I've wanted to do a big article and profile about it for a while, but instead I handed it off to the New York Times to do it. So it's sort of in their hopper to do. And I think people will be fascinated with it and her and the story of their marriage. I mean, I don't want to say she doesn't give a shit about boxing, but it's very much for her husband, her late husband, that she continues this labor of love.
Huh. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, obviously that's relevant to my interest as the history file, but yeah, it should be a pretty fun card. Hopefully it does wind up being a fun card, but also going on this weekend, I mean, this is the type of thing that, I mean, this is like that little praying emoji. This fight, this Amir Khan versus Phil LaGreco fight is that little praying emoji. Cause it's like, this is just serving me up LOLs on a plate right now, because it's this is Amir Khan here. Amir Khan is a fighter where it's like, you want to watch Amir Khan. He's almost always in good fights. Basically, when he does well, the fight isn't good. And that's kind of rare. So it's like, you know, he's often in pretty good fights. You know, he's getting wobbled here and there, even en route to winning decisions, he gets wobbled sometimes. And I mean, the darker side of this, of course, there's always a darker side. Amir Khan got absolutely flattened, like put to sleep, to bed, against Canelo Alvarez almost exactly 2 years ago. And it was the third time that he had been stopped. And each time he's been stopped, it's been really brutal. And here we are 2 years later. In the meantime, Amir Khan has had fucking delusions of his wife cheating on him with Anthony Joshua, and has been caught cheating, all sorts of weird type of shit like this. And I mean, it's all funny, but I say the dark side is like, how much is because this dude has been laid out three times and wobbled many times, probably concussed many times. I've heard he's, you know, had it rough in sparring on more than one occasion. So it's like, holy shit, you know, how much of this is because this dude is just chinny?
I think you're absolutely right. I think he's just one of those people cursed with a really shitty chin. But I mean, I don't think anybody questions his heart. Every time he's knocked down, if he's got an ounce of consciousness, he's jumping to get up, screaming at referees who try to stop the fight. You know, I love his heart. I just think that he's really lost his way, and I agree with you. I think, why not attribute it to the guy's brain was not meant to box? Not that anybody's brain is meant to box, but his in particular seems sort of singularly calibrated not to be bashed around by the likes of Manny Pacquiao in his prime during sparring, and then a series of, you know, very hard hitters. And these kind of delusions of grandeur that he's had since he's been sort of knocked off this blue chip stock that he had coming up, it's really troubling. He just seems very lost, and, you know, cutting off his family. There are issues with his family legally. You know, his family is one of those groups that sort of dropped everything, so their whole identity became Team Amir Khan. Khan dropped Freddie Roach the moment, like, he lost. So he's always sort of looking for somebody to blame. And then I heard recently, I think it was on ESPN.com, where he's referencing the fact that, that the Canelo fight turned him into a mature fighter. What the fuck does that mean?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I saw something about that. He had learned from the fight, or that he'd, you know, become different from there. I was like, huh? Okay.
What did you learn?
I mean, well, I mean, you know, I just, I'm struggling to think of too many instances where a guy getting, you know, not just like stopped, but I mean like one of those types of knockouts, like almost kind of like Glenn Johnson, Roy Jones Jr., where like they get knocked out and they get knocked stiff. Like, almost like their body is, like, almost, like, curling as they're asleep because they're so stiff. I'm struggling to think of any instance where that was a good thing, where that was, like, a net win. You know what I mean? Like, I can't think of any instance where I'm sure that there have been times where a guy's been knocked out and he's come back, or he's, like, you know, won a title after that or something like that. But in no instance was, like, the damage that was done, like, okay, you know, or worth it or whatever. It's just kind of, nah. It's, again, I kind of like talking about this kind of stuff because it is uncomfortable. It does kind of create cognitive dissonance, and it does make you think. I know a lot of people kind of want to tune into podcasts with just a bunch of, you know, yeah, bro, yeah, it's going to be great. No, no, that guy sucks. That guy's a fag. Nah, that's not fun. This type of stuff is what makes boxing, you know, and being a boxing fan unique. You know, these kinds of dilemmas, you know, the fact that you're a fan of a sport that's inherently dangerous and inherently just kind of weird. Yeah, it makes us kind of weird a little bit too, but yeah, needless to say, the hypocritical part of it is that we're going to be tuning in to watch Amir Khan, whether he gets touched up by Phil LaGreco or not. Odds are, though, he's probably not, because Phil LaGreco's not that good of a fighter and doesn't hit that hard. However, that was also kind of like the attitude going into, like, for instance, the Julio Diaz fight a couple years ago. Julio Diaz used to be a good fighter, but wasn't considered a good fighter at the time and was out of his weight class, but still wound up having Amir Khan literally lurching all over the ring, like, sideways several times. So anything goes.
Yeah, and I just want to say with Khan, like, a couple things is that we saw when he first lost, got knocked out by that journeyman early on in his career, that really the first hard shot that he took, he almost went down. Like, he just never had a chin. It's not like it was eroded through, like, a brutal amateur career. He just never was tested, and the moment he was, he went down. And then when he got up, it was like he got hit by a baseball bat to get knocked into the corner during that fight. And, I mean, Danny Garcia just took his head off with that left hook, a fight that I think Khan was winning on the scorecard. I thought he was winning the fight anyway. I mean, I don't know if it's entirely hypocritical to cheer on the sport. I think Orson Welles said of bullfighting, it's irresistible and indefensible. I think there's something very similar with boxing for us, but, you know, what would these guys be doing in many cases? If you said you can't box anymore, where would they go? What would they do? And what kind of money could they make to sort of support themselves or support the people they want to support? I don't know if they would make any different choice in many cases. I don't know if they'd want a life, you know, blue-collar labor. I mean, any kind of fucking blue-collar labor is really dangerous. So these guys choose it. I just think that what we're talking about is trying to support it being as much of a known risk as possible and, to some degree, protecting them from themselves if they're addicted to combat, or, you know, not allowing them not to have to keep fighting when they no longer really can in any kind of safe way. Like, I hope there's some kind of middle ground to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, I do agree. I have heard, and I have also repeated the line that, you know, do you want boxing, or do you want safe boxing, or do you want boxing? Which is just basically another way of saying that safe boxing doesn't exist. I agree with that, but at the same time, it's kind of like the gun debate. You obviously can't go back. There's no going back.
Yeah.
You can't take the guns back. You can't really take the boxing back at this point, because whether you outlaw it or what, we already know from history that it's going to happen. One way or another, it's going to happen. So the best we can do is try to make some sort of safeguards, or try to make it safer, try to do something. And in this case, for instance, you know, in the Amir Khan type cases, if there was some sort of pension, or if there was some sort of long-term plan put forth for these fighters, you know, that they didn't have to feel like they had to keep fighting, then, you know, maybe it would be different. In Khan's case, I'm not really sure, because I think he comes from some money and also, like, has a lot of money, so he's not fighting for the money. But, you know, that's just kind of also just boxing. But still, the feeling that you're just watching an absolute train wreck is... That's what makes this what it is. You know, it's fun and it's funny and we're laughing about it, but also feeling kind of weird about it. And yeah, good luck, Amir Khan.
Well, I mean, preventing anybody who wants to drink. I mean, probably 10%, 20% of people who touch alcohol, it's gonna fuck their life. 10% of people who start gambling, which is like fun and entertainment and all of that shit. For most people, 10% of them, it's going to destroy their life, destroy their families. Like, there are all kinds of things that, how do you stop people from doing this kind of thing? You know, somebody who learned how to fight because they needed to, where they grew up, you know, to protect themselves or whatever, and they find out they can make an unbelievable living from it. I don't know how you're going to get that out of their system any more than, like they say, with like a dog that gets blood in its mouth, like some of them never go back. And I think we are watching addicts from a safe distance in most cases, certainly even more so the better they are, the more hooked they are, the more irrevocable this addiction is. But I don't know. I mean, it just seems like in any direction, if you take it to the extreme version of an arena of ambition, you're going to see some really sick, fucked up people. It's not like for stable, healthy, balanced individuals. Like, I think Tyson made that observation. Content people don't reach for anything because they don't have to. They're content. It's only fucking people who feel worthless that really reach really high. And I think that's kind of across the board. Not always, but I think generally that's kind of the rule when it comes to real ambition.
I guess that's really the only way it could go in this situation, you know? That's just, I don't really believe in, like, destiny or anything like that, but it's just kind of, it seems that that's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean, some people, there are Marvin Haglers who are the toughest fucking guys in the world who do walk away and seem to have their faculties and seem content. So it's not like they never can. But, I mean, for every haggler, what is there, 1,000 other guys that leave with nothing and are damaged for the rest of their lives? I mean, I don't know what the ratio is, but I do see the old fighters show up at fights, and some of them I've met many times, and they don't remember me, and they don't remember anybody else that they've met several times.
Yeah. It's unfortunately just a part of the sport, but maybe we can do some stuff to change it. Before we go, we got a couple minutes, but before you got to go, a big fight happening this weekend also in Belfast is Carl Frampton versus Nonito Donaire. And you have, a special relationship with Nonito Donaire. He helped really bring forth your boy, Guillermo Rigondeaux, to the world, show the world what he was.
Yeah, that went really well. the aftermath of that was a real happy ending too.
It was perfect. Cinderella tale.
Yeah, you're doing great. Yeah, we're going out for cocktails later this evening.
Where is that guy? Nobody knows.
I mean, he told me he's staying at the Plaza Hotel, then he's going over to the main library to research some antique books, and then we're going to go to the Metropolitan Museum. No, I've heard nothing about him. And I've got piles of emails from people saying, where is he? You must know. Where is this guy? I don't fucking know.
Man. Well, I mean,
hire his Twitter guy to start writing. You can have the next best thing to Rigo. Have his fake Twitter personality.
No shit. I mean, it's... First of all, I do give Carl Frampton some credit because Nonito Donaire is the type of fighter that is, you know, he's older, but he's still pretty dangerous. But I mean, man, it seems almost like freaking ages ago that the Rigondo fight happened. I mean, what is it, a little over 5 years now? And, geez, 5 years, holy shit. But I mean, in that 5 years, a lot has happened, and on top of that, you know, Nonito Donaire seems to kind of be having a bit of a, you know, I don't know, a fourth wind or something like that to his career. He's 35 years old, but he's in his umpteenth weight class here, and staring down a dude like Carl Frampton, who is a damn good fighter, obviously has the edge in age on him, not by a ton. He's 31, but he's a much younger 31 than a, you know, Nonito Donaire. And on top of that, he's fighting him in Belfast. I'm not entirely sure he has any chance except for to really just ding the shit out of Carl Frampton.
Which is not going to happen. Frampton is a hell of a fighter. He has one loss to Santa Cruz. I really like him as a fighter, and I just think Donaire, I think he's just looking for a payday, and he's another guy that just, I think there's, I don't know, he occupies kind of a funny, weird place as this sort of mini-me of Pacquiao on his way up when he was ESPN Fighter of the Year, just before Rigo took him out, but, you know, he's a world champion, and I think in a couple different weight classes, and had some big wins, but would you put him in the Hall of Fame at this point?
I mean, I probably would, yeah. And it's one of those things where, especially if I'm looking at the ballot, it depends on who else is on the ballot. Like, if there are some guys, I can definitely think of other fighters who would be more deserving, like, you know, right off the bat than him, but he's not undeserving. He's gone through a number of weight classes, and he's defeated some very good fighters and a handful of fighters who were possibly great or, you know, firmly great. And, yeah, I mean, like, you know, the Darchinian wins look good. The Arce win is pretty good, even though it's an older Jorge Arce and, you know, Narvaez, that win looks pretty good, especially when Narvaez is undefeated for however many years and held some record for defenses and all this sort of stuff. So he has some wins on his record that are pretty damn good, but I'm not – it just depends on the ballot.
Well, and the Rigo win that he got was pretty big. Oh, yeah, he didn't get it, even though he was a 3-1 favorite. No, I'm being an idiot. No, I mean – Who would you put in the Hall of Fame if there's two people you can put in, you only get to choose one? Donaire or Bobby Chez, the greatest, the smartest multiple alcoholic driver in world history?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean,
and we're excluding his exploits as the most brilliant alcoholic driver ever.
Oh, well, then that puts
strictly
him out of the running.
Strictly in the ring, not the alcoholic Mensa driving while drunk.
That puts him out of the running. Sorry. I'm going Nonito.
Okay. I think I'd go Nonito too.
Perfect. A Bobby Chez slam is that's the best way to end the show.
Chess was a world champion.
A world champion of Mensa.
Well, and he also had probably the best misnomer nickname in boxing history.
Matt, yeah. Just no.
Wasn't he like the good looking or like something like that? Wasn't that his original?
He was like handsome Bobby Chez or something. There was something like that, but then he was the matinee idol was when he got like, you know, famous on TV. They started calling him the matinee idol.
I mean, like, who gets away with offering that as a nickname? Like, that's not on the top 50,000 things I would think about Bobby Chez. Like, hey, there's a matinee idol of a fighter.
Like I could see matinee, like a matinee at like one of those theaters, like at one of the wank theaters, like that kind of matinee. Totally, because he has a porn stash.
In Poland.
Yeah, in Poland, or maybe they misspelled manatee.
There you go. I think he might be the smartest, best looking. No, I'm going to move this into anti-Polak, Polish sentiment, which I'm just being absurd about. So,
which you already did by using the term Polak. Good job.
Yeah, I know, but I just did a DNA test, and I did have about 15% Eastern European, which means it's inclusive. It's self-hating.
Oh, okay. It's kind of like along the lines of Italian or Arab, but that's okay.
Self-hating. I own it.
All right. On that note, we're going to draw it to a close. Everybody, thank you for sitting through our racial epithets. We appreciate that. Have fun this weekend watching the fights, going to the fights, whatever you might be doing. Bryn is apparently riding on some sort of rickshaw right now. Bryn, thank you so much for joining us while you traverse the city. He sounds like he's riding Space Mountain. We don't know where he is. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. If you do us a favor, follow us on Twitter. Follow Bryn at Brynicio, Brynicio. Follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. Also, do me a favor, if you're on Facebook, if you're still on Facebook after that whole flap, we know you are. Don't lie. Go to the Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio page. Give us a like. We'd appreciate that. And also, I know a number of you have lately, but if you would continue to go to iTunes, give us a rating, drop a little sentence or two onto there. It takes like 2 minutes, not even. I would appreciate that. Does us a lot of good. Thanks so much again. Talk to you guys later. Take it easy.